Why do communists get so many converts to their slave way of life?
Well, as a matter of fact, they don't get a lot of real converts. I'm glad you asked that question, because there's a great mistake. Every time there's a revolution, every time there's a revolt, immediately someone says, this is communist inspired. Now, there isn't any question that the communists utilize that. I remember one instance that I quoted some months ago. In fact, it's back in the fall of last year. I was speaking up in a community where most of the people were Roman Catholics, and I mentioned to them that in Italy, that between 35 and 40% of the people were voting the communist ticket. But I said, you've got to get something straight. Those people never heard of Marx. They couldn't tell you one principle of Marxism. But you've got to remember that Italy is overpopulated. Italy has tens of thousands of people living in caves. And the communists, because of that economic condition, are the ones making the promises and sometimes get a little economic aid out, and the people vote for it, just like people vote here, vote, say, for the socialist ticket at times. I said, but get it straight, and I've got it straight from the highest people in government, that if there should be a world war, that the majority of the Italians would be Italians first, that some of the leaders of the communist parties over there would probably go with the Kremlin. But that, by and large, the common Italian people who don't know anything about communism or what is Marxism, they would not, of course, follow that line. Well, after I made the talk, a dear woman came up, and I think she almost hugged me. She says, oh, Senator, I'm so happy. You know, I'm a Roman Catholic, and I couldn't understand how so many of my people of the same faith would go wrong like that. Now I understand it, she said, and I'm very grateful to you. I think the incident illustrates the situation that could be applied literally to country after country in South America, in other lands like France and other places, if we'd only understand it. Oh, my good friends, we have such a wonderful country. Really, we're living in the land of milk and honey. There's no question about that, our standard of living. But put yourself, as Lincoln said, in the other fellow's shoes. Your children and your wife may not have enough food tonight, and a lot in the same place. You've got to do something. You're looking for light, for direction, for guidance. Where are you going to get it? Somebody comes around and says, you vote for us, probably brings in some bread, as someone told me. I think my statement was confirmed by Mr. O'Connor, who said that he'd been told that by a priest who had told him that. That was told today to me. So I was glad to have that confirmation, but I got it directly from the leaders of political thought in Italy.
Do you think the United States could do a better job in explaining its ideas and ideals in other countries?
We can always improve. Thank God the American way is not to rest on its oars. There's no question. But I want to tell you that there are so many people who are always seeing black when there is really white. This morning when I came in on the with Brother O'Connor from over in Ohio, it was 5 o'clock this morning. We drove over by car, and there was just little lights on the horizon. You know, I could see, have seen the darkness, but I saw that light. I want to tell you that we're doing an awful good job in so many ways. Just think of that incident of General Romulo. Where did these men, leaders of these countries, where did they get the ideas that are embodied in the Declaration of Independence, in the Constitution, Magna Carta? And he mentioned Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Well, they had to get it somewhere. They were sent out some way. Our Voice of America, our various activities through embassies and elsewhere, we could do a lot better. Russia is spending billions where we spend tens of millions in our intelligence work. But I think when you get word like you got from Romulo, it simply means a good many of the common people are not falling for their bunk.
Why do you support a renewed and enlarged foreign aid program?
Will you read that again?
Why do you support a renewed and enlarged foreign aid program?
Well, that question isn't right. It's a shortened program. The program is cut about 50% from what it was some years ago. It's cut down to 3 point, I don't know. In fact, the program hasn't come out yet. The authorization passed the Senate, and I'm glad to do it. Both your senators voted for it, and I was proud of them, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you why. If you'll read the testimony, first, that foreign aid is split about 50% in what we call offshore military procurement. For every dollar that we give to these countries for military aid, if we were to produce that in America, it would cost $3. Get that. It consolidates the West. In this country, we lack manpower. President Hoover told me we have only 9 out of the 30-odd vital materials in adequate supply on this continent. We've got to get it from our allies. It gives us airfields. It builds the perimeter around the Kremlin that has kept the Kremlin from the Third World War. $3 billion spent that way, in the judgment of the best minds that we have, means building the West so strong that the Kremlin will not attack. Second, it means saving money. If we didn't spend that money, it isn't foreign aid or giveaway money. Second, every dollar eventually, 75% is spent in this country at once and makes a demand upon your factories, creates work for your laboring men. It creates a demand for your farm products that are in surplus. It adds to the economic health of this country. But most of all, it says to the downtrodden and the weak and the weary of Asia now particularly, we're going to help you like we helped Europe. Europe has come back. She's getting no economic aid. She's only getting some military aid to build up her machine, to help build a barrier so that the Kremlin will understand that it cannot afford to attack. In my humble judgment, that $3 billion spent is the best investment that we could make. Now get it. Because a lot of people talk about $3 billion as if it was the same $3 billion back there when I went to Washington when we had an income of $70 billion. Now we've got an income of $270-odd billion, and we're marching up to $300 billion. No, my friend, don't call it a giveaway. Call it a mutual assistance. For every dollar that we assist over there, we get back literally 10 times in what it means to America. If, as one military man said, every dollar we give away, or we give them credit for, we don't give them money, we give them credit, is the equivalent of spending $3 here if we were to do it. I think I have briefly covered the answer. If there's any particular item in that you want information on, I'll be happy to give it, because to me, America now must not lay down on the job. Now that we have gone through this threatened, what we call depression. You remember after the war in 45 or 6, Harry Truman said, listening to the greatest advisors he could find, and he was honest about it, he said, we're going into the greatest depression the world has ever seen. Well, why didn't it come? I'll tell you why, because the great heart of America gave to Europe and particularly mutual aid, martial aid, that pulled back, took out, put men to work. The result was the Depression never came upon us. It just shows that there are lots of laws deeper than mere economic laws. There are laws of the spirit that make for economic and for spiritual health that you and I have got to continue. It's more blessed to give many times than to receive. Now, if there's any particular item on this mutual aid you want to ask about, don't hesitate.
What do you think will happen at the meeting at the summit?
What do you think I am? I'm not a prophet or the son of a prophet. I think that they'll get together and they'll at least find out. I rather suggest I won't suggest. It's none of my business. It's the business of the executive department, and I'm only a legislator. And it's not my business in a ticklish situation like this, unless the executive were to ask me in confidence, talk to him. I simply say that I feel that it's the right thing. I think we should meet. I want to tell you, this man Eisenhower is on his toes. You may think, some people think otherwise, but he's as sharp as a hound's tooth. He's simple and humble and honest. And when he asks for guidance, he'll get it. You've elected him. Stand by him, and we'll keep peace.